Yeah, so when it came time to pick a talk for this conference, I found myself in a bit of a spot because I didn't really feel I had recent work that fit into the theme of the conference. So this work is actually from a few years ago, but I realized something which is actually very important, and I think may actually be my most important discovery ever, which is that if you don't actually finish the paper, you can continue giving talks about it just like it's new work. So probably a lot of you have not seen this, although I have given a few talks about it before. Basically the idea here is that there's a kind of a standard approach for making stabilizer codes with prime power qubits, but I find it a little unsatisfactory for reasons that I'll explain. And it's probably worth explaining what this has to do with the theme of the conference, which is also a little tenuous connection. But certainly a lot of these resource states, and in particular if you think about magic states, that the picture there is very different for qubits, for odd dimensional qubits, than for qubits. And what this work does is it potentially helps illuminate that. And in particular, it illuminates the difference between stabilizer codes for qubits and for qubits. And so I think a better understanding of this might well help us give a better understanding of magic states, which in turn connects to contextuality and all the other stuff we've been talking about. So the connection is maybe not guaranteed, but it's something that I at least hope can be achieved. So let's get started with something that probably most of you know, which is stabilizer codes for qubits. So there's the Pauli group, has XYZ, and importantly, the elements of the Pauli group have a phase I that shows up here. So that means that that while everything in Pauli's, you can say x to some power, z to some power to get the arbitrary Pauli, those powers are just 0, 1, they're mod 2, and this is qubits. The phase is something that's mod 4. Okay, and this is something that's always kind of a little bit annoying about the qubit stabilizer formalism, that you have to deal with these extra factors of I that show up. And so, of course, you have the representation of them on the states. You have this commutation relation that x to the b, z to the c commutes with x to the b prime, z to c prime, if and only if b prime dot c minus b dot c prime is equal to 0. And b and c, again, are z2 vectors, but we have this extra phase, that's Z4. Then we have the Clifford group. And remember, this thing here, as you'll see, is different for qubits, the qubit Clifford group, than for the qdit Clifford group. And again, that's a representation of this kind of extra phase of I that shows up. Okay, so, and of course, for qubit stabilizer codes, we can define things by saying the code space is an eigenspace of everything in a stabilizer, some abelian subgroup of the Pauli group. An example would be the 5-qubit code. You have n physical qubits. You have r generators, which means you have n minus k logical qubits. And then the error syndrome is a binary vector, which is the commutation of the generators of the stabilizer with your error. Again, I imagine most of you know this, but I'm repeating it because we're going to go through a step of things and see how things change. So in particular, let's do it now for prime odd dimension. So now there's a couple of things that are different. So the Pauli group is still x to some power, z to some power. And these b and c, by the way, can be vectors, right? So that's how you can get n qubits. The phase is now omega to some power as well. And this time, omega is a pth root of unity when p is the dimension here. And so the phase can be something that's mod p. And so that's the difference between the odd dimensional primes and qubits, which is that there it was a fourth root of unity instead of a second root of unity. But otherwise,
What's the reason it works here and not for p? Like why does the C4 come out?
So that's always been a mystery. But when we get back to the generalization to prime powers, the reason will become more clear. I mean, there's probably multiple different ways you can see this reason, but this is, I find, kind of, it comes out very naturally. Okay, and so, but one effect of that is that that for the Clifford group, for qudits, well, you have the Fourier transform, which is a lot like the Hadamard transform. It's really just the natural qudit generalization. And I've written C naught, but it's really a sum gate, right? But now you're adding mod P, again, natural generalization. But instead of that phase I to some power, what we have is a quadratic phase that's omega to x minus 1, or just some arbitrary quadratic phase will allow you to generate the Clifford group. And so, again, this is a difference between the qudit case and the qubit case. I mean, there is one other difference, which is a kind of trivial difference, which is before I wrote this same formula, b prime dot c minus b dot c prime. And in practice, of course, for qubits, you don't have to worry about minus, because that's the same. But that's a kind of a z mod 2 thing. It's a natural thing that you'd expect to happen when you go from qubits to qudits. Here, the minus really does matter. Okay, and so then the rest of it just works the same, right? We take an abelian subgroup of the Pauli group. We say, okay, let's take the eigenvectors of that, and that's our stabilizer code. We could even make a 5-qudit code that's completely analogous to the 5-qubit code, right? But now we have to put in some other powers, right? Instead of to get everything to commute here. And once again, if we have R generators and N qubits, we have K with N minus R logical qudits. And the qudits here, the logical qudits are p-dimensional qudits, and the error syndrome is a vector of mod p things. Yeah.
I guess it's a bit of luck that you can fix the powers. Like, you can't take any binary stabilizer and just promote it to.
There's some work on that. I forget what the final result was, frequently you can do that. Yeah, not to every dimension, but very frequently you can do it. The thing is that when you go to higher dimensions, you just have more freedom because you have extra. And so with some constraints, you can very frequently do this. But what is true is that in this case, it's some very natural thing that's kind of very simple and works for every dimension. Okay. So that's prime qudits. So now let's go to composite dimension. So composite dimension is a little more complicated. And if you just take arbitrary composite dimension, well, again, there is something fairly standard and natural you can do, but it doesn't work as well. And so what that is you can use the Heisenberg-Weil group for the Pauli group. And so we still have x is adding, so x to the b, again, think of b as a vector, so it's adding b to v, and this is now mod q, which is our dimension here, qudit dimension. And we have z to the c is going to take omega to the c dot v. Omega is a qth root of unity. And when q is not a prime, this is not a primitive root of unity. So and that's what causes the problems. Things will not work as well. But other than that, we can still kind of develop everything the same way. We can say, okay, we'll have this commutation, this symplectic inner product, which is b prime dot c minus b dot c prime. B and c will be vectors in z mod q, and a, the phase, is again a z mod q vector. But the problem with this is that some of those standard properties of stabilizer codes no longer work. So for instance, you can write down stabilizer codes using this particular approach, which don't include an integral number of qudits. Okay? For instance, you can have a code on six-dimensional things that encodes one qubit. And it's also true that, you know, not all elements of the Pauli group are equivalent, and so that complicates the way the Clifford group is going to work. So there's a bunch of things that go wrong. I mean, you can still write down codes this way, and they're still kind of easy to work with. I mean, it's still a polynomial description as opposed to, you know, writing down state vectors. But it's not really as nice as what happens with prime dimensional. Now, when Q is the thing is that this choice of Pauli group is not a unique one. And you can develop the whole stabilizer formalism from kind of any Pauli group provided it satisfies a certain set of conditions. It's a very nice error group. And in particular, when the case that Q is equal to P to the M, there's a different choice of Pauli group that's also very natural. And in particular, there's a finite field for any prime power dimension. There's a finite field of that size. And when I say there is a finite field, it's unique up to, you know, isomorphism. So that's a very natural mathematical structure that you want to kind of work into your description of stabilizer code. And then you can take advantage of field properties to say things about the code or to find codes. OK, so what is a finite field? So this is the part where I want to start to go a little bit more slowly. So a finite field has addition and multiplication. They're both abelian. And they have the kind of the usual properties that you think of these things. There's identity elements 0 and 1, inverses, except if where 0 does not have a multiplicative inverse, and there's a distributive law. They're associative, stuff like that. Let's see. So fields, you know some fields. You know the rational numbers, the real numbers, the complex numbers. Finite fields are a bit different because they only have a finite number of elements. But still, there's some very, very simple finite fields, which is Z mod P. That's a finite field. And if you've never seen that before, it might be surprising that you have inverses, right? Because integers don't have inverses. But when you work mod P, then there's always something that you can multiply by that will give you back 1 mod P. So that's a, you know, a number theory fact. And it turns out that you can make a finite field of that has size of any prime power by taking this field mod P and adjoining to it the roots of irreducible polynomials. So if that doesn't mean anything to you, don't worry too much about that. But this is an approach that you can use to add elements to fields that make more fields. And so an example of this is the finite field of size 9. So that's 3 squared. So we're going to start with the field of size 3, and we add elements. The field of size 3 has elements 0, 1, 2. And then we're adding the roots of this polynomial, which is an irreducible polynomial over Z mod 3, which means it doesn't factor. And so we have alpha is one root. And then, so of course, it's a field. So we have to add also have alpha plus 1, alpha plus 2, and 2 alpha plus 1, 2 alpha plus 2. Okay, and the other root of this polynomial is one of these things. I don't remember which one offhand. Okay, and so then you can do arithmetic by using this equation, which is true in the field. So for instance, if you take alpha times 2 alpha plus 1, well, that's 2 alpha squared plus alpha, but then alpha squared is equal to minus alpha minus 2. And so we can substitute that. So alpha times 2 alpha plus 1 is equal to 2 alpha plus 2.
So the claim is independent of which polynomial you choose?
Yeah, up to isomorphism. Okay, and so there's many, many nice properties for these finite fields. One of them, for instance, is that a field of size Q always has characteristic P, which means that if you add any element to itself P times, you'll get 0. Okay? So that's kind of one of the defining things about Z mod P that still holds true.
So you need this for every power m. So what will you do here? I mean, there's only a finite number of such polynomials.
There's only a finite number of polynomials of a given degree, but you can use higher degree polynomials. And actually, even that is not true, because what you can do is you can add them one at a time. So you take, so this is a polynomial with coefficients over Z mod 3. But you could also add a polynomial. So, but now you have GF9. And so you could take a polynomial with elements, with coefficients who are elements of GF9, and take an irreducible polynomial over GF9. And that could still be a degree 2, so you can add just one more root.
But the claim is that these things are all isomorphic.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what order you do them in, all that stuff. They all comes out the same. Yeah. Yeah. That's math. Okay. So let's see. So another property that I'm going to use a lot is that these fields can all be kind of squashed down, back down to the base field. And so the way you do that is an operation called the trace, which actually, if you can, because, so, okay. So the other thing I guess I should say is that you can write these finite fields as vector spaces over the base field, right? Because going back to this GF9 example, you see, well, okay, so let's have the vectors. We have vectors 1, alpha, and 2, alpha. And just 1 and alpha are the vectors here. And so we can add them together, right, because the field has addition. And we can multiply by scalars because the field has multiplication. Scalars are 0, 1, and 2. And so that all gives us all of the elements of the field. So this is a dimension 2 vector space over GF3. And so then you can write the multiplication in GF9 as some matrix operation. And it turns out then the trace of the matrix, which is multiplied by some field element, is this trace operation. And you can write it down as a formula this way. And it always takes you from an element of GFQ back down to Z mod P. And it's linear. If you take trace of alpha to some power, that's equal to trace alpha. And if you trace of a scalar, meaning a base field element times beta, that's equal to A times trace beta. And there's other properties too. But the basic thing that you need to know here is that you can get from GFQ back down to Z mod P using the trace. Okay, so let's get back to polygroups. So the way, this is kind of the standard approach to polygroups for prime power qubits. So we're going to have a polygroup which is x to the alpha, where alpha is a vector over GFQ, and z to the beta, where beta is a vector over GFQ, and then omega to the c. So omega is a pth root of unity, and c is a number mod p. And so how are these things defined? Well, x, so it's a qubit of dimension q, so we're going to label the basis states by elements of GFQ. And then so x to the alpha gamma is equal to gamma plus alpha in the field GFQ. The vectors, now these are vectors over GFQ. And z to the beta gamma is omega to the trace of beta dot gamma gamma. So this is the dot product over the finite field GFQ. And then we're taking the trace to get it back down to the base field Z mod P so that we can have a number that we can raise the phase to that power.
Omega is the pth root.
Omega is the pth root of unity. Yeah, I guess I didn't write that anywhere.
Sorry, what do you mean by the dot product? Just multiplying the two things together? Or?
Sorry, this here?
Remind me what you mean by the dot product?
Well, they're vectors. Okay. So it's the vector, normal vector dot product, where components
okay.
of the regular product,
okay.
the field product, like this. Okay. And then when you do this, then the commutation rule is that if you move two polys past each other, you get a phase omega to some power, which is given by this formula, which is similar to the symplectic form we had before, alpha prime dot beta minus alpha dot beta prime, but if we just did that, that would be an element of GFQ, so we have to take the trace. Again, an element of Z mod P.
Is the trace distributive over the
prime? No, it's distributive if one of the elements is in the base field. But it's not distributive over arbitrary products. Okay, so now let me start to explain why I find this unsatisfying. So in particular, if you do this, I mean everything works pretty well. All the definitions go through, but some of the properties don't. And the reason for that is that if you define this polygroup this way, so I guess I have to be a little careful about the indices here. So this is Q is the qubit dimension and N is the number of qubits. And so if you do that, that's the same as, or isomorphic to taking the polygroup where you have M times as many qubits, where Q is P to the M, and the qubit dimension is just P. So why is that? Well, so remember that we can think of GFQ as a vector space over the base field Z mod Q. And so let's just pick some basis for that. And so when we do that, we can write alpha equals sum over of ai alpha I, where ai is in Z mod P. And then we can write x to the alpha is just the tensor product here. X to the A1, tensor x to the A2, so on. OK? So over the m p-dimensional qubits in this q-dimensional qubit. And z, you can't decompose in quite the same way. You have to pick a different basis, a so-called dual basis. So it has the property that trace alpha I beta j is equal to delta I j. And that always exists. And when you do that, though, this z also decomposes into a tensor product. And so now, by making this choice, we've explicitly decomposed our q-dimensional qubit into m p-dimensional qubits and explicitly written the Pauli group that we had up here as a tensor product of the Pauli groups on these smaller qubits. Okay? And so that means that when we go through the stabilizer formalism here, we're not getting really q-dimensional stabilizer codes, we're getting p-dimensional stabilizer codes. And the only thing that's really q-dimensional about this is that when we count the distance, we're going to count them in terms of, you know, the q-dimensional qubits instead of the p-dimensional. And so here's one example of the thing that doesn't work very well.
Is anything you said here is special about powers of time or composite?
Well,
would work?
So for composite, you don't have for composite that's not a prime power, you don't have this finite field at all. So you just can't do any of that.
Is it all for odd prime powers?
No, that works also. That same argument is for even prime powers. The only difference would be the phase.
You should change the omega.
Yeah, you should change the omega.
Okay.
Okay. So here's something that goes wrong. So for instance, if I want to write down a stabilizer for the 513, you know, mod 9 code, well, it's not enough to just write, you know, the usual things, x, z, x inverse, and its cyclic rotations. I also have to write x to the alpha, z to the alpha, z to the minus alpha, x to the minus alpha. Because this is an independent thing in that Pauli group from this, right? And so I have twice as many generators. And so similarly, the number of, if I have r generators, the number of logical qubits I have, q-dimensional qubits, is n minus r over m, which doesn't have to be an integer. Okay? And then when I do the error syndrome, well, it's this vector of commutations, but these are all z mod p things, right? I'm not getting that finite field showing up here. And moreover, there's more of them because r has to be more in order to make this work. Okay? So, you know, this works. You know, you can write this down, you can write down codes, but it's unsatisfying.
Do these guys computer? What's the condition?
Sorry, say again?
Do these guys computer? What's the condition to construct the set?
Yeah, they commute. Meaning that this, I mean, they commute in the usual sense, they're operators, but this is the easy way to check whether they commute or not. Okay. So the thing about this is that it really seems unnecessary to do that, right? Because, you know, I said, well, we had to add these extra elements. So this is now, this is the symplectic form of the code. So I'm forgetting about the phases and I'm just looking at the exponents. And the left side is the exponents of x, and the right side is the exponents of z. And you know, the thing is that the stabilizer is supposed to be closed under products. And then when we look at the exponents, that means that they're closed under addition. Okay? But for this particular code, it's clearly closed under something else, which is scalar multiplication, not just by elements of z mod p, but by elements of GFQ, right? So this thing is actually a linear vector space over GFQ. And that seems like an important structure that we want to have and we want to keep it. So what does that mean then if we move back to the Pauli group and to the regular stabilizer? Well, remember multiplication in the stabilizer corresponds to addition in the exponents. So what could scalar multiplication correspond to? back in the poly group, it should correspond to exponentiation. Now we do have exponentiation. If you multiply by 2, that's like squaring the squaring the element of the poly group. And that's something we can do. But when you multiply by alpha, what does it mean to exponentiate by alpha? That's not something that's well defined. Okay, so that's the problem. And the solution, the solution is to make up a new poly group, a lifted poly group, where exponentiation, where we will be able to define exponentiation. So what we're gonna do is the new poly group will consist of elements of the form omega to the mu, x to the alpha, z to the beta. Alpha and beta are still vectors over GFQ. And now mu is an element of GFQ. Now what's omega? Omega is nothing. Omega is just a formal thing. I just want to write it this way to make it look like the regular poly group. So really, the elements of this poly group are triple, mu, alpha, beta. Okay? And I'm writing it this way just to keep the familiarity. And then the product rule is here. We can write that down. And that's just going to work in kind of the way you'd expect, that, x goes to alpha, the power of x is alpha plus alpha prime, z is beta plus beta prime, and omega goes to mu plus mu prime, but there has to be something when the x's and the z's move past each other, which is just alpha prime dot beta. Okay? And in fact, I don't think I wrote it down on the previous page, but if you had done that in the regular poly group, the kind of the standard one, you'd get a trace of alpha prime plus beta in here. Okay, and so we have a commutation thing, which is saying what the phase will be if we move two polys past each other, which is alpha prime dot beta minus alpha dot beta prime. So we've lost that trace that we had before. And then, you know, we can do stuff in this lifted poly group, and then we're done. We can push it back down to the regular poly group using this projector, which is just taking the trace of the phase. Okay?
So the lifted poly group is the Heisenberg group.
I don't think so. We should discuss that later. I think it's not the same. But I'm not 100% sure about that.
Sorry. This is a silly question. What does it mean to write omega and then raise the power of some element of GFQ? I mean, you said...
Exactly. So that doesn't mean anything. So omega, you should not... I mean, you can think of it as a piece root of unity, but really it's just a formal thing.
Okay.
So what it means, like I said, the real elements here are just this triple of the exponents. And I'm only writing it this way to make it easier when we take the projector to go back to the regular poly group.
Okay. So I can't think about what that is as an operator.
No, it's not an operator.
Okay.
No, I mean, it would be nice if you could have some interpretation of it as some kind of weird operator, but I don't have that. Okay, so I promised you that we could define exponentiation in this group. So how do we do that? Well, we have omega to the mu, x to the alpha, z to the beta, and take it to the power gamma. Well, the first thing, so there's a couple of things that are obvious, right? So it should be that we're multiplying alpha by the scalar gamma, right? And beta by the scalar gamma, okay? And the phase omega to the mu, if you take that to the gamma, it should be omega to the mu gamma. Okay, so that's what we have here. But then, again, there has to be some term that counts for the commutation between x and z. And that's this term, gamma minus 1 over 2 alpha dot beta. Okay? So if gamma is a like an integer, something z mod p, then this is what you would get if you worked out what happens when you take it to that power. Okay? This then is kind of the natural generalization. There's another way to derive that, which is if you represent this lifted poly group as a matrix group, then you can use p to the gamma as define it as x with gamma log p, which x and log can be defined by power series, and then you can work from there. So this is the thing that works. And when you do that, you have certain properties that you expect out of exponentiation. So for instance, p to the gamma, p to the delta is p to the gamma plus delta. P to the gamma to the delta is P to the gamma delta. P to the gamma and Q to the gamma is PQ to the gamma, but only if P and Q commute, meaning commute in this lifted polygroup. So this is also where we can see the answer to your earlier question. Where does the difference between qubits and qudits come from? Well, look at this formula here. There's a half. Okay? If we try to do that for qubits or for powers of 2, then it wouldn't work. Because 2 would be 0. You can't divide by 0. This formula would break down. And that's why you have to go to something different. You have to take, well, kind of square root of omega. And if I have time, well, I will make a little bit of time, at least, to tell you about that. You have to do something different for powers of 2. So this definition is only for odd q. OK? OK. So so there's a very nice connection then between lifted polygroup elements and not single elements of the regular polygroup, but actually sets of elements. And in particular, because we have this exponentiation in the lifted polygroup, we can think about different powers of our lifted polygroup element. So for instance, here in the lifted polygroup, this is for one nine-dimensional qudit, we can think of an element like omega to the 0, x to the 1, z to the 1. And we can square it, of course, which if you work out is omega to the 1, x squared, z squared, if you go through that formula. That's not obvious. You have to calculate it. And then you could also take p to the alpha. And again, putting it in the formula, you get something like omega to the 2 plus 2 alpha, x to the alpha, z to the alpha. Now, if you project this back down, well, this one here goes to omega to the 0, x to the 1, z to the 1. That's fine. This one here, when you trace back down, it actually goes to omega squared, x squared, z squared, because trace of 1, in this case, happens to be 2. So that's a little confusing, but again, it's just some correspondence. And of course, these things are closely related, right? This one is actually what you get, I believe, when you square this. It could be. If not, then I've made a mistake. Made a calculation mistake. So, but what's interesting is what happens when you project this one down. Okay, when you project this one down, you get omega squared x to the alpha z to the alpha. And that is independent in the original polygroup of this thing. Right? Now, if you throw away the phases and look at the symplectic representation, the relationship is that this vector 1, 1, this vector alpha, alpha is alpha times the original vector 1, 1. Okay? And before, we didn't know how to connect them other than by saying that. In particular, we didn't know how to connect the phases of these things. They're kind of independent phases. But now, these phases are determined by this exponentiation rule. And so how does that work? Well, this thing here, the exponent is a GFQ element, right? Which is like m separate things z mod p. And those m separate things are the exponents of this and this. In this case, m is 2. Okay? So this is a way of organizing the phase information for all of these related powers in the lifted group. Okay? And it turns out that for odd qudit dimension, there's a unique correspondence between a single poly in the lifted poly group and the set of polys that you get by taking p to different powers, mod q and gfq, and then projecting down to the regular poly group. Okay? So this is the full set of polys that you get by throwing away the phase information and then using scalar multiplication on the vectors. Yeah?
I guess I missed something crucial. Is the commutation, if the commutation between two operators in the lifted polygroup is 0,
mm-hmm.
then is it true of all their powers?
I think that follows immediately from this property.
But it's true.
Yeah, Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it follows from this, right? Because if P and Q commute, then the powers of P and Q, you can go through this and then switch them and then go back.
Do you check the commutation relation in the lifted product group and that gives you the...
Okay. Any other questions on this?
So one-to-one correspondence between things in the lifted Pauli group and the...
And the sets of things in the regular Pauli group. Sets of things that are related by, in the symplectic form, by scalar multiplication.
Okay.
PFQ, scalar multiplication.
I have another question. It's about motivation, because you motivated all of this with the 5-qubit code.
Mm-hmm.
But is there, I guess what we just discussed is the general motivation, right? You can construct code in this lifted Pauli group.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to worry about it.
Right. So let's do that. So a lifted stabilizer, it's going to be a stabilizer in this lifted Pauli group, is an abelian subgroup of the lifted Pauli group, but it needs another property, which is that it's posed under exponentiation. Right? That was kind of the whole point of doing it. And once we do that, then this is a one-to-one correspondence with what I'm calling true GFQ stabilizer code. So those are stabilizer codes using the regular prime power approach that have this extra property that the symplectic form is a GFQ vector space, that it's closed under scalar multiplication by GFQ elements. Okay? So there's a number of ways you can make this connection. But for instance, you can say that a state psi is going to be in the regular Hilbert space, and it's an exponential eigenvector of something in the lifted Pauli group, if and only if it's an eigenvector of, I think there's supposed to be a pi here, of pi p to the gamma for all gamma. And then it, you know, has some eigenvalue that you can get by lifting, and the trace here organizes that again. Just like you're taking the eigenvalues are going to be, so when we project back down, remember omega is mod p. So the eigenvalue of any one of these things is going to be basically a mod p number. Omega is some mod p number. So we have to collect all of them to get a GFQ element. And it turns out there's a unique GFQ element that has this property. So then you can use that to define a stabilizer. You say the code words are the exponential eigenvectors of everything in the lifted stabilizer. And then it all works the same. You can also define a Clifford group. You can define automorphisms of the lifted Pauli group that preserve phases and preserve exponentiation. And then again, there's a correspondence between, you can use the projector to go back down to the elements of the regular Pauli group. Okay, so now in the one or two remaining minutes that I have, let me say something about the even case. And this is more complicated, unfortunately. So for the qubit case, we needed to have this phase I, right? Which is not a square root of unity, it's a fourth root of unity. And the way that was showing up, remember, is in the exponentiation rule, we have a factor of 1/2. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to kind of get a factor of 1/2 in our omega. Right? We're going to have to have powers of I, which are now not field elements, but they're things that are kind of mod 4 correspondents of that. And so what this is what's known as a Galois ring, or equivalently a ring of truncated Witt vectors. And in particular, for this particular case, you don't need to deal with that whole mathematical formalism. You can just say, well, what we're going to do is we're going to let the exponents of the phase be things of the form alpha 1 plus alpha plus 2 alpha 2. And again, and the 2 here is kind of a formal thing in order to help you get the rules right. Where alpha 1 and alpha 2 are elements of the finite field. And it's an even field, so it's q is 2 to some power. And so addition, alpha plus beta, is a little funny. You get alpha 1 plus beta 1, but But then you get 2 alpha 2 plus beta 2, and then this square root alpha 1 plus beta 1 tells you kind of the carry bit. Square root, luckily, is uniquely defined in a field of characteristic 2, right? Because the plus square root and the minus square root are the same. So this is a well-defined formula. And then the multiplication is kind of what you expect. So you can define this f of a, f of alpha is alpha 1 squared plus 2 alpha 2 squared, and you can define a trace using that. And that lets you get back from the w2 of q to w2 of 2, which is z mod 4. So remember, you can write elements of z mod 4 in this way, and these rules turn out to be correct for that. And so this lets you get back from the kind of the higher Galois ring back to the base Galois ring, just in the same way we got from the higher field, the larger field, back to the base field. Okay, and so when you do this, you can define everything the same way we were doing before. We have a lifted polygroup. We have, now I'm writing it as I to the mu, and mu, alpha, and beta are now elements of these Galois rings. So everything changes a little bit to take this into account. So for instance, we have mu plus mu prime plus 2 alpha prime dot beta, because that gives you a phase that's kind of in the mod p phase, whereas other things happen in the mod 4 phase. P and Q commute similarly if you have 2 CPQ is equal to 0. But we still have this CPQ defined without that factor of 2. We have a projection involving trace. We have exponentiation. And you see the factor of 2 has disappeared in the exponentiation because we're back down. We kind of absorbed it by going from omega to I. But other than that, the formula is the same. So the other thing that happens here is we have to worry about some analog of Hermitian versus non-Hermitian operators, right? For qubits, we have to say, minus 1 is not in the stabilizer. And in that case, we're going to have to deal with Hermitian things. And so this is the definition of what Hermitian means here, that 2 mu is equal to 2 alpha dot beta. OK. So then you go through the same approach. You can define everything. But the one thing that doesn't work in this case is that there's no longer this unique correspondence. Now there's multiple elements of the lifted polygroup, for instance, that correspond to sets of things in the regular polygroup. Stabilizers, lift of a Q GF 2 to the M stabilizer is not unique anymore. And the differences appear, these alpha and beta, remember, in order to make it work, they had to be vectors over this W2 of Q. And the plus 2 part of those things is kind of problematic. It's extra information that doesn't really do anything. So that's where the ambiguity is. And you can't just get rid of it. That doesn't work either, because they do interact down here, somewhere in here, certainly. They don't actually kind of change what the code is. So it's a little confusing, and it's possible there's some different approach that works better. But this is the best we're able to come up with. So that's the end. For the odd prime powers, I'm pretty confident that this is the right way to approach it. Because it has kind of the right symmetry that we want, that we're taking advantage of the full GFQ structure. And I should say that most of the codes that people have actually written down for prime powers have this structure. So something that was already existing, it's just, it wasn't something that was brought out in the literature. It encodes the right number of qudits, an integral number, and it organizes the error syndrome information into GFQ vectors, so you're really seeing that GFQ structure. And the other thing that's kind of interesting is this, from a mathematical point of view, is that this is a group where you can define exponentiation, which is kind of rare. There's not too many groups where you can do that. So my hope, and again, the connection, the strongest connection to this conference, is that thinking about things this way that help illuminate the difference between qubits and qudits, thinking about this Galois ring may help us understand better the difference between qubits and qudits and give us insights into magic states, contextuality, and all that stuff. Okay, thanks.
Other questions? You define the exponents of x and z to be elements of ring Q. By extending those to be elements of rings as well, is it possible to move up the hierarchy? Is that different
hierarchy? I mean, this is something we you and I tried to work on without much success. I mean, that's sort of what happens, right? So we know for the diagonal elements that if you go high enough in the hierarchy, which depends on the prime base, that you get now not p roots of unity, but p squared roots of unity and p cubed roots of unity show up. And so you could represent those things as, instead of polynomials over p things, over these Galois rings. That part, I think, is correct. But as far as understanding the non-diagonal elements that way, well, yeah. Maybe, I mean, that's my hope, that there's some way to do that, but I don't know how.
Is there any other questions?
Do you have CSS code type constructions still? So can you, is there some in which you can take two classical codes over GF4 that are dual and then?
Yeah, that could probably work. I haven't worked it out. I mean, there might be something funny about what the dual condition would have to be.
Yeah.
It actually probably will work better, I would think. Because, yeah, I mean, this is just off the top of my head. I've not analyzed it. But I think probably with the usual approach, the condition is that instead of the regular C1 is dual to C2, it's the trace of the dot product could be zero. And here, probably you can remove that trace. Now, obviously, if the dot product is zero, then the trace of the dot product will be zero. But here you're kind of actually getting the condition that the dot product is zero. Probably. Not 100% sure. Yeah?
So you have this formula where you say that your exponentiation is basically an automorphism, right? So that p to the gamma, q to the gamma is p. I guess it fails if you include phases, right? So the p and q...
So we're talking about the odd primes, probably.
Fine, exactly right. So the property 3, if you have some omega to the mu 2, no, then it no longer commutes exponentiation, right?
Sorry, if you have omega...
P and q, I guess they do not have... The mu is 1 for p and q, right?
No, mu could be any... These are arbitrary things. The mu could be anything there.
Okay.
They do have to commute.
Have to commute, I see.
If they don't commute... But that's right. What you normally expect out of exponentiation, right? You don't expect... If two things don't commute, then, you know, you need...
Okay.
Some sort of correction to that formula.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Very basic questions. Sure. How does this compare to the Hilbert space?
Okay. Well, that's yeah. So that's again something that I don't have. So, so these things here don't have a direct interpretation as operators. So it would be nice to have something like that, but it may not be operators in the Hilbert space. It might be some modified Hilbert space. I don't know. All you can do right now is to take the projector, go back down, and then of course you can take exponents and take the projector of that too, and get multiple operators.
You can take the group algebra in the Hilbert space.
Yeah, I mean, you can always write it as an operator on something, but that's not too interesting. Or at least I don't have an application of that. Let's put it that way.
All right. Well, let's thank Danielle and take a 25-minute break to come back at 11:30 for Herbert.